Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, this is really quite remarkable. I'm looking at a couple of the latest tweets and Truth Social posts from President Donald J. Trump when it comes to Iran. One post says this: we now have complete and total control of the skies over Iran. Another says we know exactly where the so-called supreme leader is hiding. He is an easy target, but is safe. We are not going to take him out, at least not for now. Man, I can't wait to hear what Dr. Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana and what he has to say about that and so much more. Dr. Kia, great to have you back on the show. I guess first, let's see, in this quick opening segment here, your reaction to President Trump and what he has said about Iran and about the terrorist Ayatollah as well.
Thank you very much, Aaron, for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners. I think what we are dealing with is a president determined to stand up to a bully, a delusional bully in Iran, who was the cause of the havoc that we saw in October of 2023. He armed and financed Hamas. He armed and financed Hezbollah in Lebanon. He armed and financed the Houthis in Yemen. And he unleashed that firepower against Israel. And I think after October 2023, and we talked about it in previous shows, the Israelis understood where the head of the snake was. It wasn't in Gaza. It wasn't in Lebanon. It wasn't in Yemen. It was in Tehran, Iran.
Tehran has been funding these attacks not just inside of Israel and against Israel, and they've been responsible for the kidnappings and the rape and slaughter of innocent Israelis and many others from all over the world, but they've also been behind these proxy attacks against U.S. troops. They've been behind the deaths of so many American troops over the years of the war on terror in particular, but in reality, this war goes back to the Carter administration.
Yes, it actually started with the Khomeini regime taking our diplomats hostage and keeping them as hostages for 444 days and releasing them on the day President Reagan was sworn in. And, of course, it has a very long and painful history. But I also have to add, and I would be very, very unjust if I don't do it, that while we have all been victimized by terrorism and their intervention in the internal affairs of so many different countries in the region, still the principal victim of Iranian terrorism have been the Iranian people. They have
the people themselves.
Thousands of people.
And that's the question. Are the people ready to overthrow the regime? That's just one of the questions. We'll talk more with Dr. Kia right after this.
Securing America.
A Senate Appropriations Subcommittee hearing Tuesday examined the issue of military installations as the fiscal year 2026 budget process continues. Georgia Democratic Senator John Ossoff on why this is an important national security issue.
If service members can't live, eat, train, and work in safe, healthy, world-class facilities, readiness is undermined, and so is morale.
The Assistant Deputy Chief of Space Operations for the Space Force, General Zachary Warakomsky, said facility importance cannot be understated.
It is foundational to the launch and operational missions we conduct across the entire spectrum of conflict.
Assistant Secretary of Defense Dale Marks added,
we want to ensure warfighters are able to deliver 100% of their effort to their missions without having to worry about issues with their housing or the health and safety of their family members back home.
The condition of military housing has been hotly criticized in recent years. Kevin Uresky, Fox News. Hi.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
That was just over 1 month ago we were talking with, when we last caught up with Dr. Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana. He is the director and professor of history at the Central and Southwest Asian Studies Center at the University of Montana. One of the most popular professors for a long time. In fact, he was there when I was a college student at the University of Montana, but he actually grew up in Iran. So he's not only a leading expert on the Middle East. He grew up in Iran back when they were a peaceful country before the terrorists took over. Dr. Kia, I definitely want to get your take on the people of Iran and will they support regime change? In fact, Senator Tim Sheehy was asked about that on CNN last night. But let's start. Where do you assess Iran's capabilities right now? The running theory has always been that, well, if anybody does anything to stop Iran from getting a nuke, if anybody does anything to hold Iran accountable for their attacks on U.S. troops or other interests in the region, they will unleash a fury on the entire region. And now their attacks are finally starting to weaken. Their missile attacks are starting to weaken. All of their top terrorist leaders, a lot of them have been taken out. A lot of their you were joking during the break that pretty much the only airlines flying over Iran right now are the Israeli airlines.
Yeah, that's actually a Persian joke that all the airports are closed and all the flights are canceled, but you can still fly the Israeli airlines. Which tells you something about how the people of Iran think about their own government and how incompetent it is. I think a lot of this huff and puff about the threat from Iran to regional stability, if they are confronted, was basically coming from Washington and those who wanted to somehow bribe and provide, financial contributions to the Iranian regime under the name of somehow finding a peaceful compromise. As you know, and I have been saying for years now, that first of all, the Iranian regime, or much of it, I should say, is a paper tiger. That, all these missiles and all this military capability and even the nuclear program is basically a defensive posture to prevent any action by United States and its allies, especially Israel, to get rid of the government. It is also a strategy to psychologically defeat their own people and to create enough fear and terror that people would say they are too overwhelming of a power to be challenged. But as you asked, and I think this is a great question, the Iranian people have tried repeatedly to get rid of this government, especially after 1988, but in particular after 2009, repeatedly coming out, and not in hundreds or thousands, but in hundreds of thousands, and they are paid, with their lives. We don't even know how many people have been killed, blinded, because last time when they rose in rebellion, and the order from Khamenei was to shoot to the faces, to the eyes of the demonstrators. And this is the brutality, this is the inhumanity of the regime that rules the country. We even do not know how many thousands of political prisoners Iran have. We know that all the prisons are packed. And these are doctors, these are nurses, these are teachers, these are professors, these are ordinary workers, these are ordinary farmers who have spoken against the government, who have complained or criticized, or who have written and published, against the regime, and they have been punished in the most ferocious and violent fashion. And the result of this is we have been trying to appease them, and the worst part of appeasement was, of course, the deal signed by the Obama administration and then followed, though unsuccessfully, by the Biden administration, which handed this regime $7 billion, if you can imagine, and allowed them to sell oil, especially to China, which made them flush with money, over $90 billion worth of money. And I know now that many of our listeners know that much of that money went to arming Hamas and Hezbollah and all the proxies in the region, Houthis in Yemen, and they unleashed then their firepower against the State of Israel. So I do not want to leave any doubt behind that the person responsible for this humongously tragic moment in history of the Middle East is none other than Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran and the regime he runs. I think it's very, very unfair to blame the Israelis for trying to defend themselves against years of abuse, against years of terrorism, against years of getting missiles fired at them.
Well, and then the regime in Tehran. Yeah, and then the regime in Tehran, they felt that they were so close to getting a hold of nuclear weapons that they had to act. Otherwise, the nukes would be used on them in Israel. And then Ted Cruz made a great point last night with Sean Hannity. He says there's a reason the Ayatollah is developing ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles. He doesn't need intercontinental missiles to strike Israel. He needs intercontinental missiles to strike us. Hold that thought. More with Dr. Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana right after this quick break. By the way, we're taking your phone calls as well if you want to jump in.
Broadcasting live across the big sky. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, so the last time we caught up with Dr. Mehrdad Kia, it was after this historic trip to the Middle East by President Donald Trump. You know, when he was visiting Saudi Arabia, visiting the United Arab Emirates, stopped in Qatar as well. And Dr. Mehrdad Kia was talking about the strategic importance of President Trump's Middle East trip and basically how President Trump was boxing in the terrorists in Tehran. And so, yeah, that was just over 1 month ago. I think May 16th, I think, is when we had that conversation. It's now Wednesday, June 18th. Dr. Kia, we talked about what President Trump is sharing on social media. Apparently, the Ayatollah is hiding out in some bunker somewhere, and he has now officially responded as well. And I think you got a chance to listen to his entire response earlier this morning. What stood out to you?
Yeah, I actually listened to him in Persian in, at the time of delivery of the speech. First of all, he's clearly very shaken and pale. You can tell the face has not slept for a long time, or at least comfortably. He has already let his lot of his relatives to leave the country. They are fleeing, basically. And he has delegated some of his authority to a military council, which means a leadership within the so-called Revolutionary Guards, which are the elite forces. What he basically said, he rejected President Trump's ultimatum to surrender, and he said that this was just the beginning of the fight, and they have much more in their arsenal to fire against Israel. And he warned the United States against helping and supporting Israel. But I have to tell you, and as I was listening to him, it just dawned on me that I'm listening to a delusional man. Why? Because he talked about the massive demonstration on the streets of Tehran in his support. And apparently they were planning to organize a demonstration of their remaining supporters. It never took place. And he referred to something which never happened, which is quite astonishing, which shows that he's completely cut off from reality. He's not told what is really unfolding in the country, and maybe they're trying to protect him from becoming more anxious and frightened. But several times he referred to the heroic demonstrations of the Iranian people. What I am hearing from Iran is wherever there is a hit and people gather, immediately there are protests and shouts of death to the dictator, down with Khamenei. And the people are ready. But, you know, in a state of war where there are explosions, and when Prime Minister Netanyahu has asked the people of Iran, especially folks in Tehran, to leave the city so the casualties will be lowered, you cannot expect people to leave their homes and at the same time demonstrate for the overthrow of the government. But it's there. It's coming to us. And I was very relieved to hear the son of the late Shah, who is one of the leaders of the opposition, calling on the Iranian people to reorganize and come to the streets, because now they enjoy the support of not only United States and Israel, but the rest of the world, to get rid of this government. The ultimate overthrow, I have always said, should take place through the hands and actions of the people of Iran rather than a foreign power.
Yeah, and on that note, let me throw you on hold real quick, because I want you to hear this soundbite as well. If you haven't heard it yet, Dr. Mehrdad Kia, on that point, this was Montana's U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy. He was on CNN last night. Let me pull it up. I just reposted it on X. I'll see if I can play it straight from there.
Do you support regime change in Iran?
Regime change can only come from one place. That's the people of Iran. They have to make that decision. We've learned that the hard way in Iraq and Afghanistan. I was part of both those wars, where we chose to change regimes. And guess what? We ended up there in a long time in a war we didn't understand, fighting for something that not all Americans agreed with. So regime change comes from one place. That's the people of Iran making the decision to decide if they want to continue to live under the yoke of a murderous regime, or if they want to overthrow that regime and return to the relative prosperity and freedom that Iran once enjoyed 46
years ago. So you
think
the president should rule out regime change in Iran?
Regime change is not our decision. It's not America's
choice. Well, I mean, the president was saying today that they could take him out, that he's safe for now. I mean, he had that caveat there that obviously is not, you know,
sure, the president likes to negotiate. The president likes to know that all the weapons are on the table in a negotiation. So, frankly, I think he's handling this perfectly. I think he's making it clear, like he has in most of his other negotiations, that anything is on the table. But I think he's also been very clear that he doesn't want to be opening up new fronts of war anywhere, but especially in the Middle East, where we've been, frankly, fighting nonstop for almost half
a strike.
All right, there you go. Dr. Kia, your thoughts on what Senator Sheehy had to say.
You know, I completely agree with him. I think it's not up to the United States to change the regime. I think both United States and Israel, through their support for the Iranian people, can go a long way to ensure that outcome. And the only problem we now have is this transition should come at a time when people are at least certain of their survival if they come to the streets, because demonstrating against your own government in the midst of a war and in the midst of attacks on the capital, it's highly unlikely. So I would suggest that we need a little bit more time, but I think the energy is there, the enthusiasm is there. I listen to a lot of Iranians talk about their determination to get rid of it, but half of the city is gone now. And they usually get into cars, get into buses, get into trains, and they travel, especially to northern Iran. It's a beautiful country, very lush. And on the Caspian Sea, the shores of the Caspian are very famous for swimming. It's a Mediterranean sort of setting.
Mountainous
so
region.
Mountainous region, bravo. And that's where they have gone. And I think once this dust settled, that's what we want. But I have to also emphasize something, which is very important here. The son of the late Shah also, I was very happy that he also brought it up. The key element in all this is that we have a system in Iran where we have two military structures. We have the Revolutionary Guards, who are the mercenaries of this regime. They're basically a terrorist organization arming and training Hamas and Hezbollah, and also killing people in Iran. But there is an old armed forces, the remnants of the previous regime, that is the Shah's regime, and they have never been involved in killing or attacking the demonstrators in Iran. They are well liked by the people, and I think their role must be now to play a very positive and constructive role in maintaining the security of the country, but also helping with the transition. Iran should learn something from what happened in Iraq. If you have anarchy and chaos on the streets, you have looting, you have burnings, and so on and so forth, the Iranian army can play a very constructive role by coming in and allowing people to feel a certain level of security, but at the same time, they're strong enough to get rid of the remnants of the Islamic regime and to get rid of Khamenei and the cohort.
What you have to say about not the IRGC, but the regular Iranian army kind of reminds me of the regular Iraqi army, you know, and after the overthrow and the toppling of Saddam, and you know, one of the biggest mistakes that was made after the invasion of Iraq was when they came in and they disbanded the Iraki army. Now you got a bunch of guys who could have cared less about Saddam Hussein, but now they're out of work, and what's the easiest way to make money? Well, getting paid to attack American troops, and that was one of the biggest mistakes there.
Also in Iraq, if I may just interject.
Yeah, go for it.
You had the Republican Guards, which were loyal to Saddam. We have the Revolutionary Guards in Iran. Then you had the regular army. We dismantled both the Republican Guards and the Iraqi army. The Iraqi army was not ideological. The Republican Guards were. And I think we made a big mistake to have a big sweep, as you just said correctly. And we needed an element of Iraqi military presence in order to maintain the peace and stability of the country in a more effective fashion.
I know in getting the opportunity to chat with you over the years, and for those of you just tuning in, we're hearing from Dr. Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana. He grew up in Iran and then fled before the terrorists took over. He heads up the University of Montana's Central and Southwest Asian Studies Center. Dr. Kia, about 1 minute to go before our next break here, and then definitely want to take some phone calls from our listeners if they want to jump in on the conversation. But, the U.S. government has typically thought of, if anybody does anything to Iran, Iran will unleash the fury on the entire region. But now Israel controls the skies, and Trump tells people to flee the city. People flee the city. Are they the paper tiger that you've long talked about them being?
Yeah, I have always said, you know, that there was when the nuclear negotiations with the Obama administration was taking place, I remembered Secretary John Kerry saying, if we do not sign this agreement, we would never, know what kind of repercussions we're going to, because Iran is becoming the big kahuna, basically, and they are the giant in the region. You know, almost as if he was frightened by the prospect of confronting Iran. And look what has happened in a matter of a few days.
Remarkable.
Basically eliminated the entire command structure of the Iranian armed forces.
And now their attacks on Israel are starting to wane. The Ayatollah is hiding in a bunker. A lot of his top lieutenants already wiped out. A lot of his infrastructure already wiped out. All right, hold that thought. More with Dr. Key after this.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
Ranchers across the state are eager to see what calf prices will be here in the summer of 2025, and things are getting underway with Spirit Livestock Video Auctions Corn Belt Classic in Sioux City, Nebraska. Auctioneer Kyle Shobe said even though the cattle futures were in the red yesterday, the yearling market was looking very good.
It's always interesting to me when we get to this first big week in June. It always seems like early in the week the board wants to back up. It's just a little bit of a head scratcher, but I'll say this. Today, it did not seem to affect the cash trade one iota.
Again, mostly yearling selling on the Superior Corn Belt sale yesterday. Cattle from right here in Montana weighing 7.5 to 800 pounds, saw a price at $3.38. 8 to 8.5 for 8 steers, $3.11 to $3.16, with 8.5 to 899 pound steers, $3.08 to $3.12. Heifers, they're anywhere from $15 to $30 back. Prices for the 7 to 7.5 weight heifers, $337 to $343 from Montana, 8.5 to 9 weights, $291 to $307, with 9 to 950 pound heifers from Montana, bringing $2.85. Now later this morning, the calves from Montana will begin to sell. Prices are expected to remain historic here as the cattle herd remains low and drought impacts the U.S. cattle herd. I'm Lane North.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
What about Russia and China? We got to get Dr. Merdad Kia's take on all of this. Isn't it interesting how Russia is kind of like, a little busy right now. China, a little busy right now. Why aren't they coming to the aid and the assistance of their buddies in Iran? You got to hear what Dr. Merdad Kia has to say on that front. He and I were chatting more during the break there. And I kind of, I asked him, I said, it's just so crazy that Donald Trump, the people in Tehran are listening to President Donald J. Trump. He tells them to leave the city, they leave the city. And then, the going theory was always, from the U.S. government and all these intelligence assessments that would get reported on TV was, well, if Israel does what Israel's doing right now, or if anybody did, Iran would unleash a fury. They'd shut down the Strait of Hormuz. Oil prices would skyrocket above $100 a barrel. And yet right now, Iran can't even control their own airspace, and the Ayatollah's hiding out in a bunker. So this kind of goes back to, what Dr. Kia has said over the years about how he believes that this terrorist regime in Tehran is basically a paper tiger. More from Dr. Kia in a second, but hey, we want to hear from you if you want to jump in on the conversation. 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app as well. Let's go to Mike in Libby. Mike, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for the call.
Good morning, Aaron.
Morning. Yeah, good morning.
So, this can all be laid at the feet of Obama and John Kerry. 10 years ago, they sent the mullahs a whole bunch of money. You remember the pictures of stacks of cash. And what I would like to see is Obama strapped to the nose of a bunker buster bomb, kind of like Slim Pickens and Dr. Strangelove being dropped down on the Iranian nuke sites. That would be fitting justice to my mind.
Yeah, remember the plane loads of cash that were sent back to Iran? And then, of course, look at what Joe Biden did in just the last 4 years alone, unleashing the oil money for the terrorists in Tehran. I also got, before I get to the messages on our app, let's get Dr. Kia's take on that one. Dr. Kia, your thoughts.
Yeah, I completely oppose these negotiations, especially because all it did, they bribed, the Iranian regime with billions of dollars worth of cash. And in return, they only got a delay of a few years in the Iranian government's program. And now we find out that even that delay was fake, because the Iranian government was cheating behind the scenes, hoping that they could continue their nuclear development program. And the IAEA, the International Atomic Agency, actually found sites that they had not shared with the International Atomic Agency, which tells you how fake the whole thing was, in fact. But what was it? It was to sell the idea that the DNA of this regime, which is terrorism against its own people and against the world, can change by negotiations, that they are a normal state like we are or like our European allies. And that is the lie. The lie is that this regime cannot change its own DNA, which is a warmongering, abnormal state, which wants to constantly interfere and intervene in the internal affairs of its own neighbors and even beyond. Look, Lebanon is not a neighbor of Iran. Yemen is not a neighbor of Iran. Syria was not a neighbor of Iran. And they had troops, they had security forces, training terrorists all over the place. And I have to tell you one thing, Aaron, because you hear this from a lot of Iranians. As you know very well, Iran is not even an Arab country. They don't
That's
speak
Persian.
Arabic. It's a Persian country, right? And the question is, for a Persian country, which for over 2,500 years of its history was an ally of the Jewish people. You know, you go back to the Bible, where the founder of the Persian Empire, Cyrus the Great, is mentioned as the liberator of the Jews in Babylon, where they were held as slaves, and celebrates the Iranian monarch, the Iranian king, for liberating the Jews, actually referring to Cyrus the Persian as the anointed one, and sending the Jews back to Jerusalem to rebuild their temple, all the way to the time when the Shah was in power, before his overthrow in 79, where Iran was the only country which had de facto recognized the State of Israel. I went to school in Iran. I had Israeli classmates in Iran. We were the closest buddies and friends. Mm. Iranians and Israelis have always been friends. And there were daily flights between Tehran and Tel Aviv at the time.
Interesting.
Can you imagine? And
wow.
These guys turned all that around.
Yeah.
Destroyed it, basically. For what?
For what, exactly. And for how long now has the whole world been allowing this and tolerating this?
Iranians are negotiating with Israel, but Iran is not going to negotiate.
Yeah. Well, this is why President Trump's trip to the Middle East was so significant just over 1 month ago. And that leads us to Russia and China. But before we get to Russia and China, Dr. Key, I've got a couple of messages that came in on our Montana Talks app. Questions about the homeland. You know, we've had an outright invasion of illegal aliens into this country. Mary in Butte says this, with our borders open for 4 years, do you think we could have sleeper cells in the U.S. that could attack us on the homeland from these terrorists? And then Okotoks in Laurel basically says the same thing. Let's not be ignorant. There are likely thousands of Iranians amongst our 10 million plus Biden illegal immigrants, and we are definitely susceptible to their terror actions on our soil immediately. It doesn't take a rocket or a bomb to cause destruction here. How does the does what's taking place in Iran right now? I mean, we know that Iran's got terrorist front groups all over the world, but I mean, with Daddy Warbucks back in Tehran facing such troubles, how does that impact the potential terrorists on the homeland?
Those are excellent points and excellent questions. First of all, I want to make sure that we understand this. Every issue has its own nuance, and we have to appreciate that nuance. We have a very large Iranian-American community. And thankfully, I should say thankfully for a reason, thankfully that community is a very vital, prosperous, active, and engaged community.
And pro-American. They came here legally. They fled the terrorists in Tehran. Yeah, but the question is who came in the last 4 years illegally?
As the joke goes in Persian, they came with university degrees and credit cards. They did not come from the southern borders. hundreds of thousands of them came as legal immigrants, and then they adopted first, you know, the permanent residency green card, and then became U.S. citizens, and they are thriving now.
I was going to say, didn't you get here on the last Air France flight out of Tehran or something like that?
Yeah, I came through the last Air France, and I have to tell you, if you look at just that flight, you know, there were so many people. You know, I knew a few doctors and a few people from various professions. So Iranians have contributed. We have about 500,000 Iranians in Los Angeles area, Southern California. Iran, you know, this is a fascinating part. Los Angeles is the second largest city in the world after Tehran for the number of Iranian doctors and dentists, which tells you something about the kind of caliber we have. But
so there's probably some really bright, shiny, smiling white teeth in L.A. right now, seeing the news out of Tehran.
Oh, yeah. They're all waiting to go back maybe at one point and continue. But remember also, and this is very interesting about the Iranian-American community, is that the majority are Republicans because they blame the Carter administration for losing Iran and for not supporting the Shah and allowing Khomeini to come to power. This is another fact that we have to remember. But having said all that, I completely agree with the concern that there are sleeping cells. And these are dangerous because Iran has been involved in organizing a network of its agents and spies. Remember that they actually assassinated a very prominent Iranian-American opponent of the regime as early as 1979 in Washington, D.C., a guy dressed delivery man, rang the bell. The poor guy went to pick up what he thought was a letter or a special delivery, and he was shot.
And they've tried to assassinate more on American soil here in recent years as well.
They tried to kidnap, you know, the woman activist, Masih Ahmadinejad.
Hold that thought. Another quick break. Stand by. Did you know?
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I saw a great video earlier this week, and it was an Iranian-American, a younger man, and he was responding. One of the ICE protesters asked him, well, aren't you an immigrant? Why don't you support these ICE protests? He says, I'm a legal immigrant. I came here legally. That Iranian-American also served in the United States Army. So he was celebrating the 250th birthday of the U.S. Army instead of protesting the president of the United States. But that was a great video. Let's see. Before we get back to Dr. Mehrdad Kia, we definitely got to talk Russia and China. And why is Russia and China appearing to not help out their buddies in Tehran right now? First, though, let's go to Mario in Glendive. Understands a thing or two about the communism in Cuba, now in Glendive, Montana. Mario, did you have a quick question or comment for Dr. Kia?
Yes, I do. Thank you for taking my call. And I commend Dr. Kia for the love and the passion he's got for the Iranian people. I love that about him. He's a great guy, and I'm glad he's a guest of yours.
Amen.
But I also like to, yes, I love him. Anyway, I like to see Donald Trump make a deal with the government in Cuba, and a deal that cannot refuse, and get the Chinese and Russian out of Cuba. It's an island right 90 miles away from Miami, you know. I don't like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You look at all the threats facing this country. Yeah, you talk about China and Russia. You know, Dr. Kia, that's exactly where we want to go next. And Mario, thanks for the call. But, you know, this is really why President Trump's historic trip to the Middle East just 1 month ago was so important, and his the relationships he's built with all these Arab leaders. It doesn't just box out Iran. It keeps China and Russia, it seems like, and it's looking like right now, out of the fight.
Yeah. Mario, first of all, thank you very much for your call and your very kind comment. My heart goes for the Cuban people. I know it's a beautiful country. It has an amazing culture, and it has been held hostage by a bunch of thugs, just like Iran, Fidel Castro, his brother, and what is left of it. Friends who have visited your beautiful country tell me people are full of vitality, energy, but they're really stuck in an economy and in a political system that is not taking them to the next step, which is returning to the days when Cuba was a vibrant, active, and creative society. And my prayers go to the Cuban people that they can get rid of it and once again come back to, you know, the days when they were a very vibrant society. I have to tell you, a large part of this was the work of Soviet Union, which backed Fidel Castro. In this case also, it's the work of Russia that the Iranian regime has basically sustained itself for this long. But you know what is amazing, Aaron, about this is that, did you see how quickly Putin just handed his buddy Bashar al-Assad in Syria to his fate? That is, the moment the things got hot and the people of Syria rose and they started marching to Damascus, he abandoned Assad. All they did for him, they put him and his family on a plane and they flew them out of Syria. That's what I think we are hoping for to happen also in Iran, because the only two countries which have stood up with Iran are China and Russia. Now, Russia does not have much of an interest in keeping this regime, other than the fact that they have been buying a lot of weapons from Russia. China, meanwhile, as we were talking about it during the break, now they have been bought by the Saudis and others. They have invested in billions of dollars in the Saudi economy, in the various countries of the Persian Gulf, the South, the Arab countries. And they don't want to lose that investment because of Iran. And for that reason, they're willing to see this regime go and not worry about it. So the so-called allies of Iran, China and Russia, are not that faithful and that strong in their alliance and support of the regime in Tehran.
Well, and with about 1 minute to go before we run out of time, this is why President Trump's trip to the Middle East and all of his relationship building and I think effective diplomacy with Putin seems to be playing out well.
Yeah, I think maintaining direct lines of communication with Putin was essential, and he has done a great job doing that.
Dr. Kia, anything else you want to tell folks all across Montana? Greatly appreciate your time this morning.
No, our hearts and prayers go to all our forces in the region. They are essential. Our hearts and prayers go to the people of Israel for their safety, to the people of Iran. We hope that they rise in the coming days and week and take back their country.
Well said. Yeah, especially, you know, I don't think everyday Americans understand just how many American troops and diplomats and business people are actually boots on the ground right now as we speak, all throughout the Middle East, all throughout the Arabian Peninsula right now. And so, keeping all of them in our thoughts and in prayers for sure. Dr. Mehrdad Kia, one of Montana's greats, always an honor. Thanks so much for your time this morning. We're out of time. Boy, that flew by. Tomorrow, I think we'll try to keep the phone lines open so we can just cover any of the topics under the sun. And so folks all across Montana get a chance to weigh in on all sorts of the big topics in the news this week.